I'm Joseph.
And I'm Nick.
And this is Fish Jelly.
Ooh-wee. Ooh-wee.
I recognize that.
Kathleen Turner, serial mom.
That's right.
Watching the birds.
Well, we went MIA yesterday because I wasn't feeling well. So we suddenly couldn't do the live.
Suddenly, last summer.
But I'm only human.
You are. Was there a backlash?
There was concern. Well, because the live is set up ahead of time, so people were in the live chat waiting. Oh. So I feel bad for that, but it was, but I'm back. Mm-hmm. Not better than ever, but here we are. So my apologies. And I do want to thank the people who continue to sponsor the podcast. Mm-hmm. They can do so through Spotify. Also, we have merch and people are buying it, so thank you. Uh-huh. There's a link to the merch shop in the description for this episode. Moving on to restaurants. A PSA, because
I didn't realize this has now become a regular portion of the podcast.
People like it.
What I eat.
Yeah. Well, where we go.
Where we go. What I eat, where we go. That could be the name of the podcast.
What I eat, where we go. Well, the problem is I'm not very descriptive, so I don't think me talking about menu items is, I don't know. Anyway, there's a restaurant in West Hollywood called Queen Violet.
Uh-huh.
And they're very social media friendly. If you go to Instagram and look up Queen Violet, there's some really, they have a wall that has shrubbery and then the restaurant name and neon lights. So it's the perfect place to take a picture. They have this shrimp dish with blue noodles. Uh-huh. That is extremely photogenic.
The magic noodles.
You've had it.
I've had it. Yeah.
It's okay.
It's okay. Yeah.
I think I would qualify their food as okay. Mm-hmm. We've eaten there many times. We've had brunch there.
Okay. Well, it has the trifecta of things going for you. It's affordable.
I think it's more expensive than it should be.
Yeah,
but it's still reasonable.
So it's reasonable-ish to you. And there is easy parking.
Probably the number one reason I agree to go is that there's a huge parking lot next door in prime West Hollywood, mm-hmm. which is crazy. And for the 30 plus years I've been visiting LA, that parking lot has existed. And somehow people know not to park there, mm-hmm. which is so strange to me. There is big signage because it's next to a Wells Fargo Bank, and it's very clear, Wells Fargo Bank parking is not allowed here. And then beyond the restaurant Queen Violet, I believe there is a vet, maybe
like a pet related
or something. But the plaza as a whole seems kind of vacant, mm-hmm. except for this restaurant.
Derelict.
So there is always parking, which is great.
And the restaurant itself it's always comfortable.
They have outdoor seating.
Mm-hmm.
The indoor seating is not comfortable.
No, sit outdoors. So don't go when it's raining.
So you can't go when it's raining, but at night it's cute. If you go during the day, you can see that it's a little dusty and busted out
there. You can see the wizard behind the curtains. Yeah. Yeah.
But at night, I think it's a cute place to go. But yeah, and anyway, the food's very mediocre to me. But I wanted to mention it because this happened to me in Vegas a few weeks ago when I was with my sister. Because the check came and I just grabbed it and paid. And she's like, "You don't look at the check." And I'm like, "Well, I just look at the total." But in my mind, I have an idea of how much I spent. So I don't really do the breakdown. And she's like, "You need to look at your check because they add the gratuity."
Yeah.
Many places add a gratuity, even if it's a small party. So then you're tipping double.
Yeah.
And that happened to us last night, which was annoying to me because they're very nice.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's bad service, but it's like the food's not great. And it's last night, the service was lacking a little bit. But the gentleman, the person serving us was very nice.
Yeah.
But then I was upset that,
you were made to wait.
And they don't make it clear. Mm-hmm. Right?
About the added gratuity.
So I don't like that. That feels shady to me.
So they got a 45% tip last night.
On mediocre food. To me, that's annoying. But anyway, check your bill. And if you see a charge on there you don't understand, ask. We have two things in the start of this man section.
Oh, we do? Ooh.
So you mentioned an actor, Mohammed Ben Attia.
Got a director.
Oh, a director.
Yeah, because in my Best and Worst of Venice, I said that his new film was Moroccan. And off the top of my head, it is not Moroccan. It is Tunisian. He's a Tunisian film director. And I've seen three of his films, so I misspoke.
And then I realized recently that on desktop, when I look at the YouTube studio desktop, I may have been blocking people accidentally.
Oh, yeah.
So there are, you know, the comments are moderated. And then as the content creator, you can add additional filters.
Okay.
So like, you know, there are obvious filters like hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the algorithm's smart, it can, but then you can add additional words, like, which I'm not going to say the words I've added because then people will know, but there are other words I don't like to read or hear that I've added.
You'll have to tell me about those words. I don't know about these words.
I'll tell you. It won't be a surprise, but it's just like, and I may be doubling up. I don't know. I'm assuming that YouTube allows these words in because I see comments like that.
Is one of them Gunsel?
No. So that's what prompted me to add the word. But it automatically holds the comment and I have to approve it.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So it doesn't like automatically delete them. It just holds them. And then if I don't check within 30 days, then they get deleted. It
puts them in limbo. Mm-hmm.
So we do get a lot of comments that are on hold. And then there's an additional filter that's like for hate speech. Like literally when people call us the F slur and somehow those get through, but they get put in a separate bucket that YouTube makes it so you don't even have to be exposed. So it'll say like you have comments in that bucket. Are you sure you want to look at them?
Do you look in the bucket?
Yeah, not regularly, but when I do, it's like, okay. So I'm assuming a lot of them get, you know, because I will go more than 30 days without looking in the bucket. But anyway, the other day I was in the initial bucket that shows all the comments on hold. Mm-hmm. And one of them was from a commenter who I recognize, like they comment on a lot of things. So when I read the comment, I was like, oh, that's, I don't even know why they would hold it.
Mm-hmm.
So I click, you can either accept or, well, I realized that I've been clicking the wrong button. Because I thought the check mark meant yes, block it. And then there was like a circle that I thought meant no, or like let it go through,
mm-hmm.
but it's actually the opposite.
Oh, okay. Well, good.
So
to know.
I've certainly
how
blocked.
Many years in, are we?
I know. So, well, I'm assuming because I've had people comment in other avenues, like on Instagram, like, mm-hmm. "Hey, I think you blocked me."
Yeah, I've seen that stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's like, so here's the challenge. I tried to figure out how to unblock,
mm-hmm.
but I can't. And even if I could, it's like I don't even know who. I mean, unless I recognize the name. Mm-hmm. But it's been so long and so many, but and maybe those people are mad. The one good thing though is if you've been, because then I had to research, like, do people know I blocked them? If you've been blocked on YouTube, you can still leave a comment,
but you don't know,
and it still shows, but only for you.
Oh,
so so they call it like a shadow blocker, like you've been shadow banned, or I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard.
So the only way you would know if you want to know if you've been blocked, go to a video, leave a comment. Like logged in as you, mm-hmm. log out of YouTube, then go back to that video and see if your comment's there.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you stay logged in, it will, which is kind of smart because it's like probably less agitating to people if they think they actually left their dumb comment.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But not if they've been blocked accidentally.
No. And well, because then I feel bad also because then it's like, oh, people are like probably leaving comments and thinking like, oh, we don't ever react to them.
Sure.
But so I don't know if well, here's the other thing too. The comments that do go into the bucket, they were filtered for a reason via YouTube. So it's also like, well, maybe you said something a little too spicy and that's how your ass got in the bucket to begin with. So, but for anyone who thinks we blocked them, we probably did, but it wasn't on purpose. I was trying to like allow the comment because a lot of times they get blocked for being a little saucy, but I don't mind that.
Mm-hmm.
So now I don't want people to think I blocked them because I was being sensitive. I accidentally blocked you. And I just don't know how to unblock. Moving on to films released we didn't cover, Camp Hideout.
Yeah, directed by someone named Sean Olson. And I don't know anything about this film. It's about a kid that runs away to a camp that's hiding out, get it, from a couple of goons that he has something they want. It's like a family-friendly, adventure-ish film.
The Inventor.
This is an animated film. Daisy Ridley does a voice about... Leonardo da Vinci, I believe. Jim Capobianco and Pierre-Luc Grandjean are the directors, and apparently neither of us had interest in watching it.
Is it Canary or Cannery?
Canary.
Isn't there a book called Cannery Row?
Or... It's Steinbeck.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
this is Canary.
There's an interesting story behind the making of that film involving Raquel Welch. Who they approached to star in it, but didn't really want her. They wanted her name to get a higher budget. And then they yanked the deal away from her and said she was difficult and she had to go to court. And because she wasn't, and because they really wanted Deborah Winger.
So in the final product, who's in the movie?
Deborah Winger.
Oh, shit. Did Raquel get her money?
I believe she did.
Oh, you know what? I bet that happened a lot. Like they would get names to secure budgets and then at the last minute be like, no, girl.
Yeah. Anyway, that's that. But Canary is a documentary about a man named Dr. Lonnie Thompson. It's directed by Daniel O'Malley and Alex Rivest. And it sounds like it based on the one comment I happen to see on the poster saying that this is the closest we'll come to a real life Indiana Jones. It's a man that runs around and does things like that.
Oh, Cassandro.
I was surprised that you passed on this, frankly, but I saw it out of Sundance, and I would watch it again. I think it's a fine enough film. It's directed by Roger Ross Williams, and it stars Gael García Bernal.
Oh, the wrestler?
The gay luchador.
Oh, I would have watched that.
Well, I don't know. No. I sent you this list, and you did not return it to me with that on it.
Oh, I must have. It was an oversight then, because I was interested in watching it.
Oh, okay. Well, Raul Castillo and Bad Bunny are both in it. Castillo is playing the closeted love interest of Gael García Bernal. Castillo? Yeah.
The guy from Wednesday?
He's in Wednesday? No, that's Luis Guzman.
So I need to Google.
You know Raul Castillo, very handsome from Looking.
I'll be the judge.
He's also heterosexual.
Oh, yes. He's in another show where he plays... He's in that movie that was... The gay black guy who was in the army and his like lieutenant is this Raul Castillo.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. That was the, God, what was that called again? The outpost, the training.
Yes, he is very handsome.
Yeah, so apparently he's pegged to play these closeted people, even though he himself is not. He's also really good in We the Animals. But yeah, well, I don't know. I think I believe it got a theatrical window this week and I think it'll be on Amazon Prime next week. So, we still could cover it if you wanted.
Oh, okay.
And you know, it's just in time for Hispanic Heritage Month, which I didn't realize starts mid-month.
Yeah. And yesterday was Mexican Independence Day.
Yeah. My initial plan.
Oh, wait, did I just mess that up? Was it yesterday? Anyway, go on.
My initial planned secret film today was supposed to be related to that, but we will have to move that to next week.
So yes.
I'm staking that claim for next week.
Yesterday was Mexican Independence Day, September 16th, which is often Cinco de Mayo is not Mexican Independence Day.
No.
For everyone out there.
It's just a day to get cheap Mexican food for most people, though.
Oh, I wanted to see Elevator Game.
You did, but
the link you had it expired.
You know, I don't know why they sent me the screener link in July, because it was no longer available to me, and then... There was too much else going on this week, so this fell through the cracks.
The premise looked interesting.
My tremoring primrose.
There's a movie called Love at First Sight.
Oh, but Rebecca McKendry, shout out, directed the Elevator Game. Love at First Sight looks terrible to me. Starring Haley Lou Richardson, it's a Netflix release about two people that fall in love on a plane.
Mm.
Good luck with that, girl. That's directed by Vanessa Caswell.
Well, there's a movie, there's a BET Plus original starring Eva Pigford, who I think you watched like 5 minutes of it with me, where she's on a plane and this like handsome white man.
Oh, I don't
trying to get
that.
At her, and her best friend is like the flight attendant, so they're being all like,
she's the go-between.
But then we find out that it's like a thriller. Like, he's actually psycho.
Sounds like
but.
Something Liam Neeson-ish.
Yeah. Next, A Million Miles Away.
This is, I can get, assuming being released this week, also in keeping with Hispanic Heritage Month, starring Michael Pena as Jose Hernandez, a man who was a farmer turned engineer turned astronaut, based on a true story.
That looked really corny, so that's why I passed. I'm sorry.
Directed by Alejandra Marquez Abella. It did. I'm not the biggest fan of Christian Scientologist Michael Pena either. I think he's.
Yeah, fine. I don't care for Michael Pena. Speaking of Elevator Game, he's in that horrible movie where the toast goes jelly side down.
Devil.
Right? Isn't that him?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That written by M. Night Shyamalan.
That's also about an elevator.
Yeah.
Lastly, Rebel.
I watched this. I was going to write about it for us, but I didn't care. I don't think I'm going to write about it. I didn't like it. But this was, I think, in the midnight section at Cannes in 2022, 2 hours and 16 minutes. And I was like, I'm not making time for this then. We've seen... they're best known. It's directed by Adil El Arbi and Bilal Falla, who directed Bad Boys for Life, which I didn't care for. But they made this saga based out of the war in Syria in 2014, and a young man who's believes he's leaving Belgium to go help, but becomes radicalized and then tortured and killed because he doesn't share the beliefs of these terrorists. And then his 13-year-old brother, who also becomes semi-radicalized. The best part of it to me is the mother, played by an actress I really like, Lubna Azabal. I feel like I've never looked up how to say her name, but Lubna, I love you, gal. But that is
an Lubna?
Yeah.
I love you, Poppy.
I love you, Poppy.
Madonna, I love you.
And she gives a good performance, but I thought the film was a little overwrought, even though it's dealing... I think I keep forgetting that war is also still going on. Anyhow, it's worth a look.
Okay. I was thinking that Beyonce's lyric is Queen Mother Madonna, I love you.
Mm-hmm. And everyone thought she was saying Aaliyah, and then Aaliyah comes up again.
But then she says Aaliyah later, so...
Like, but she says Grace Jones twice, so I don't know.
She does say Grace Jones twice. I feel like she should have said Janet, but, you know. She does say Janet, but it's between, like...
At least she didn't leave Janet out, can you imagine?
Well, she left Mariah out.
Yeah, but I mean, Mariah's difficult.
Okay, movies we watch for fun. 3 Days of the Condor.
You watched part of this with me. I got a new Kino Lorber 4K. Robert Redford and Faye Dunaway.
Oh, Robert Redford was pretty handsome.
Oh, yeah. He was very fetching in the 70s.
Although, how old was he in that movie? Go ahead. 3 Days of the Condor.
He was probably born in the late 30s, huh? You know, I remember my dad absolutely loved this film. And the last time I watched it, I was probably a teenager, and I remember probably finding it a little dull then. But I think it's a very well done conspiracy thriller, with kind of an anticlimax, I think, with what's really going on regarding black gold. But
black gold oil.
Yeah, oh. I find his the situation with Faye Dunaway, who is a random woman he captures on the street and kind of holds her hostage. But then
I saw that
sex and fall in love. Well, not, you know, she ends up kind of caring for his cause. It's interesting watching Faye be subdued and sensitive also.
I feel like people would say the same about me.
that's interesting. They got her on a tranquil day. Because that's not usually the case.
Robert Redford was 39.
Oh, so what year was he born?
36.
Oh, see. Not bad.
But yeah, he's quite handsome.
Mm-hmm.
The Emperor Jones.
You know, I own the Criterion Collection on Paul Robeson I believe I've never watched Paul Robeson in a film, but I watched this 1933 feature directed by Dudley Murphy, based on a play by Eugene O'Neill, which Robeson originated on stage. And I have to say, this is quite interesting. And I was actually shocked at how many times the N-word is used in this movie. Oh. But he is this escaped prisoner who ends up, don't even ask me how this happens, but he makes it to a Caribbean island where he becomes the king and then starts enslaving his own people. terrible person. It's worth a watch. And I think Robeson's kind of magnetic. And I'm looking forward to watching more. But randomly, I had come across this on, what's HBO called now?
Max.
And I was like, oh, like this is a history I need to catch up on, but very interesting.
Next, One False Move.
Yes, Carl Franklin's kind of breakthrough that Criterion has put out, which I'm supposed to review that. Excellent. Really excellent. And I didn't realize Billy Bob Thornton, who stars in it, is in a supporting role, also wrote it. And Billy Bob Thornton, the female lead is Cinda Williams, who he married briefly after this. But Bill Paxton's technically the lead, is this small town Arkansas sheriff who, and a very young Michael Beach, who's very handsome and very sinister, which is surprising because I don't think of him in that way at all. But this trio of people are murdering people in drug related activities and then going to hide out in Arkansas, and the LAPD knows that he's already that is where they're headed. So this small town sheriff is on the lookout, but he has kind of an explosive secret regarding the woman that's part of that trio, which is he sired a child with her. I highly recommended. Carl Franklin, we watched Out of Time recently with Denzel, which I remember you liked as well.
Next, The Quick and the Dead.
I hated this movie. Speaking of my dad, I remember he didn't like this, and I first, despite it being directed by Sam Raimi and starring Sharon Stone and Gene Hackman and DiCaprio, like all people that I, you know, like for the most part, I'd never seen this, so it's not good. I think the stories behind the making of it and the tension on set between Russell Crowe and Hackman and Raimi are much more interesting, and how Sharon Stone, who is kind of at kind of the greatest height of her fame in 95, also Oscar nominated that year, and is producing this and insists on casting Crowe, who was unknown to US audiences then, and then paying Leonardo DiCaprio's salary out of her pocket. Those are all more interesting than whatever's happening on this film, which is about this gun contest, this gunfight where people spend 3 days killing each other and have some vague personal vendettas that I could care less about. Sharon Stone is trying very hard to be Trey Sirio. But I don't recommend this film. It's caca to me.
Lastly, we watched Legally Blonde, which I had never seen.
And I haven't seen since my dad took my sister and I to a mall in northern Minnesota to watch it.
This is the 2001 film starring Reese Witherspoon. I don't particularly care for Reese Witherspoon. I don't have a problem with her. I just, like, anytime, like, she would not get me to see it. Like, her in a movie is not enough for me to watch.
She has never topped her performance for me in Freeway. I could watch Freeway any day of the week.
But we were in the bedroom flipping through movies, and I don't know what possessed me to agree to watch Legally Blonde.
Well, I said Raquel's in it.
Oh, I think it's because you said Raquel's in it. But I'm glad I did, because I enjoyed it.
It's cute. It's very formulaic and campy and kind of dumb. But it's Reese Witherspoon is clearly like throwing herself into this role.
Yes, I thought she was really sweet. I have issues with the story. I mean, it's not a perfect movie.
Not at all.
But I thought she was sweet. I think, I didn't like Selma Blair, her character. I think, I don't have a problem with Selma Blair, but like in this character, this movie, I hated her.
Oh, she's just a bitch. Yeah.
And then when she tries to turn it around and be nice, like, girl.
Bye.
Absolutely not.
I don't think so. Because she's mean a couple times.
She's mean, but I think that's the charm of whatever her character. What's Reese? Elle Woods. I think the charm of Elle Woods is she's just nice. Mm-hmm. And it's heartwarming. Like, because she's like this rich girl. And then even her parents are so, like, the dad is like this boozy housewife.
He's like law school is for people. What does he say? That are boring,
ugly. And ugly or something.
Yeah. He's like, but, baby, bunny, why would you want to do that?
But I just loved like that her parents were so cool and like don't expect much from her, but she expects a lot of herself. And they're really cute scene. I think her relationship with Jennifer Coolidge's character is cute. And then Jennifer Coolidge is always funny to me.
The worst part is really the bend and snap scene.
Oh, that bend and snap. I know, you know, I that is the one thing from this movie I knew.
Yeah.
Because it's like.
And that traveled beyond. Yeah.
But I don't think that's. Oh my God, there's this black woman like breakdancing.
Yeah, why are you doing that, girl?
Oh, I was so embarrassed for myself and for her.
But it just, the bend and snap itself, you couldn't come, nobody could choreo something that looked a little more graceful or, but I don't, it's just stupid. But there, to me, my memory as a young closeted queer kid with my dad, my younger sister, was like that film was maybe the first thing I saw at a multiplex where it's like, oh, there are like blatantly gay people in this.
Yeah, there's a the cat got excited.
Yeah,
yeah, there's a plot point of like, because there's this whole murder trial.
Your knockoff Prada shoes or your last season Prada shoes.
And a character being gay is kind of a way to save
Allie Larder, who the evil white woman from Beyonce is obsessed.
But I do think it's funny that we find out who the real killer is because of a hair related. factoid.
And that's Linda Cardellini,
is it?
Yeah, with the perm. It is,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was amusing.
It's cute. Raquel, you know, from my taste, she doesn't have enough to do, but
no she doesn't, but I would watch the second one. I want to see what Elle's up to.
I'm sure I watched that. I would have been in an undergrad by then, but I don't remember a lick of it. Red, White, and Blue, I think is the title.
I'm that person who's so late. Like, have you seen Legally Blonde? It's really cute. Like, yeah, girl, 23 years ago. Anyway, we need to take a break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The secret movie this week is not a secret. It's the 1987 drama film September, directed by Woody Allen. Mm-hmm. So we were supposed to do our live video on it, but I came down with the vapors, so we couldn't do it. But it was based off of a poll, and the theme for the poll was September, which when we were having dinner one night at our favorite pizza place.
We were drunk.
And we were drunk, and I'm like, let's pick all our themes for September and October right now. So we like came up with all these themes, and then I think I'm the one who came up with September, and I really thought that eight. I was like, oh, this is such a brilliant idea, like let's find movies with September in the title. Mm-hmm. Child, nobody voted for this. There are only 441 votes, which is like less than half of what it normally gets within like the first 3 days. So it's been over a week and there's only no one cared about September. I think the problem was no one recognized these movies. The options were September 30th, 1955, Until September, Come September, 2 weeks in September, and September.
And the only one that I've seen was Woody Allen's September. I voted for September 30th, 1955 because it stars Susan Tyrell.
I wouldn't have even... Because if I don't recognize any of them, that seems like a lot of work to look up each one.
Sure.
So kudos to the people who did.
This is the most enterprising, I guess.
Yeah. But September 1, it was the margins are pretty thin, like which I think shows that people didn't know any of these. So,
and this is the best known of those.
But it only won with 31%. So to the 12 people who voted for that, here's a review of September. So
I've seen it before. It's been,
you had seen it before.
Since 2009, though.
This movie is sort of modeled after a Chekhov play called Uncle Vanya.
Yes.
Like loosely, I guess.
You've seen another play modeled off of that, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike.
Starring Sigourney Weaver. Mm-hmm. We saw it at Lincoln Center.
Yeah, back in also 2013.
Which was weird because we were very close to the stage.
I was right up front. Yes, Sigourney was right in front of me.
Her hair looked really nice. Mm-hmm. And then it had my friend in it, Billy Magnuson.
Well, that was your introduction to him.
That's when we became friends, yeah. Uh-huh.
In your head movie.
In my head, I feel like we're friends. But anyway, so the film September, which is directed by Woody Allen, it's about at a summer house in Vermont, neighbor Howard falls in love with Lane, who's in a relationship with Peter, who's falling for Stephanie, who's married with children.
I don't think that's a very good description of this.
Well, because it's effective in that there's like sort of this love tangled web of whatever. That's half the movie,
yeah.
I guess, but it's not as interesting or dramatic as that sounds. So sure. Basically, Mia Farrow plays this woman named Lane. The names in this movie are so confusing to me because Elaine Stritch, her character's name is Diane. Mm-hmm. Diane Weiss is in the movie. Then Mia Farrow's character's name is Lane. And at a point,
Diane Weiss says,
Diane, Lane. Called you over here. So then now someone's saying Diane Lane in the movie. I was so confused. So I'm just going to use the actors' names.
Okay.
So Mia Farrow is this fragile woman who's recently attempted suicide but was not effective. So now she's convalescing at her home in Vermont. And we see that she has company, like her best friend Diane Weiss, her mother Elaine Stritch. Each of those women have husbands. Then there's...
I was going to show you the... that's the Polish poster art for September.
Oh,
isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, but I would. It's a butterfly with the word
"a moth" getting close to the flame and falling apart.
Shout out to Janet Jackson's Rolling Stone cover, which was published
anniversary
30 years ago this weekend. Yeah. But anyway, and because you said like a moth to a flame burned by the fire.
Yeah, and of course.
I my love is blind. Can't you see my desire?
Yeah.
That's the way love goes.
Where she's being.
You know, there's a podcast dedicated to.
Her dulcet tones.
Janet Jackson.
I believe it.
It's these two women who are super fans.
Oh, you should be a guest.
Yeah, I need to look them up.
You should pose it in a way that, don't you know who I am? Why have I not been invited to this?
It's called the Janet Jackson Podcast. So, ladies, if you're out there or if someone who knows them, tell them that there's no reason why I shouldn't be on this podcast. But,
That also reminds me, do you remember the musical, I guess, group or act September?
No.
Is she Russian, the lady? Her name's Petra. And remember they had that one hit, You'll Never See Me Again?
You'll never beat me again.
Those were my lyrics, yeah. Because I filed that report on you.
Domestic violence is not funny. Believe me, I know.
Of course not. But when you can turn it into art pop.
I got so derailed. So Mia Farrow is recuperating at home and she's visited by her mom, her best friend. Their husbands are there. There's a neighbor who comes to visit. And Sam Waterston is also there. And we find out.
Yeah.
Sam Waterston, he's a writer.
He's like renting a part of the property.
Yeah.
To work on his.
And he is very interested in writing about Elaine Stritch because Elaine Stritch is sort of modeled after Lana Turner.
And yeah, I believe that because Lana Turner, Johnny Stampinato was shot to death by Lana Turner's teenage daughter.
So Elaine Stritch in this movie is playing an actor who we're told her boyfriend was shot and killed by Mia Farrow, her daughter.
And then we watched that Betty Davis movie with Susan Hayward about the same thing, Where Love Has Gone.
So of course it was a big scandal when it happened, but of course decades have passed and we see that Mia Farrow is dealing with a lot of like issues and trauma related to her childhood and I'm sure this murder. But Sam Waterston is trying to convince Elaine Stritch to let him write her like memoir, specifically like talking about the murder. Mm-hmm. And that's upsetting Mia Farrow. Mia Farrow is in love with Sam Waterston.
They've spent the whole summer together, I think, walking and talking.
But it seems like he's just an opportunist who's probably just doing this for a nice, cheap place to live and to get close to Elaine Stritch. And then Diane Weiss has been having an affair with Sam Waterston.
Well, we kind of see that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's starting to happen.
So, of course, like neither Diane nor Mia know that they're both like into this guy.
Well, no, Diane knows. Stephanie knows.
Oh, that's right.
She knows that Lane is head over heels for her because that's why she's initially trepidatious.
So the story is very simple. Everything culminates with, so as you know, this very much feels like a stage play, like a one stage, like a
chamber piece.
Yeah. So as the audience, we're witnessing this budding romance between Diane and Sam. We see Mia sort of breaking down because she's not, she can tell that Sam's not that into her.
Denholm Elliott is the elderly neighbor that is
who's in love with Mia. Because Mia is trying, like, while everyone's at her house, we have a real estate agent there showing the house because Mia is going to sell it and take that money and move to the city because she thinks she needs a change. And we'll get to how that plays out. But everything culminates with Sam kissing Diane, like, in private. And then, like, the real estate agent opens the door to show, like, a potential buyer. And then everyone sees them. Mm-hmm. So now Mia knows. And it's also a scandal because Diane Wiest is married to another man. So
who's taking a break from him for the summer.
Yeah. Yeah. But so, of course, there's contention between Mia and Diane, but they end up resolving it because it seems like they both realize that Sam is like a
not worth their time.
Yeah. But then a secondary plot is Elaine Stritch, who's really only in the beginning and the end. But it's at the end when Mia is like really fragile and she confronts her mother because all of a sudden, Elaine Stritch is like, she doesn't realize that Mia's selling the house.
Even though she's told, the daughter has told her this.
Multiple times. And she's been in the house all day where a real estate agent's been showing it. But the mom is so self-absorbed, Elaine Stritch, she doesn't realize it. So when she does, she goes, wait, you can't sell the house because I've decided to live here.
With my husband, Jack Wharton.
And Mia like loses it. Like, bitch, what? Like, you told me this was my house, and after everything you put me through.
Well, she's lost it because the affair with her friend has also been discovered. So, like, yeah. she's at fever pitch here.
And then she intimates that, like, you know, you told me to tell the lawyer I shot your boyfriend. Mm-hmm. So to the audience, we assume that Elaine probably killed that man, but she had her daughter take the blame for it. So then, of course, Elaine changes her tune like, oh, sweetie, you know what? I don't have to keep the house. You sell it and you do what you need to do. I'll be fine because you just called me out about murdering someone. And then the film just ends.
I like this film more than you do, I think. But I like that she's just this eternal. Elaine is this eternal sacrifice that was established at that moment where she took the fall.
So I read that Woody Allen had shot this film with a different cast.
Diane Wiest and Mia were both in it, but Mia's, I believe, own real life mother, Maureen O'Sullivan, was in the original version.
Yeah. So, and then Christopher Walken was in it, originally cast to play the Sam Waterston role, who I think actually seems like he would have been better, but.
Oh, and I think that poster I showed you, that might've been Czech, not Polish. Sorry.
But anyway, I read that, yeah, this film was shot twice because the first time they had a different cast and then there were even cast changes in that. Then they reshot it. And then I had read that Woody Allen had since stated that he would like to redo it again. And I think my problem with the film is I think the casting is weird. Mia Farrow is so fragile, which is her brand, and it works in a lot of things. I mean, obviously, like Rosemary's Baby, she's perfect. Mm-hmm. But in this movie, it's just like on sight. It's just like textbook, like fragile woman with mental health issues and PTSD who's just attempted suicide and she can't get her life together. It just feels very obtuse. Like,
well, it doesn't help that the wardrobe, both her and Diane wear, I think I said that it looks like they're wearing clothes reconstituted from tablecloths.
It's very, to me, like when Maria Bamford says, when she pretends to be her mother and her mother says, when you don't wear makeup, you look mentally ill. Like, that's how Mia Farrow seems. So it's like, this movie's not a comedy.
No, it's one of the few that, like, Interiors is a superior film, but yeah, it's very much like that.
So then there's that. Then Diane Wiest, who I really, really like.
Love Diane Wiest.
Like, really, really like her. But I felt like in this, I don't know, these two women are so unappealing, and I think maybe that's part of it. Like,
sure,
that is so obvious to the audience that this handsome man is just using these women.
But I think the dialogue for the most part is pretty good because it gets, I think, rather poetically am able to determine why these women are feeling this way. Because when Diane Wiest explains, it wasn't so much that she's Sam Waters, she's at a point in her life where she's unhappy in her marriage, and he represented a challenge. So she admits to flirting with him kind of to test her own powers of desirability, right?
Right.
And that, because as the title suggests, it's all about, you know, autumn is setting in, the end of summer, the life changes. Elaine Stritch is obsessed with aging and appearing old, and it's all about things kind of fading out, and eventually everything's going to be dead.
Well, continuing with the casting, Elaine Stritch, I feel, is like a bull in a china shop. Like, mm-hmm. again, it's not a comedy. So then you have Elaine Stritch coming in, and initially it's like, oh, she's so fabulous, she's so funny. Mm-hmm. But by, and that's just the beginning of the film. And then we get like 45 minutes where she's not really.
Well, she's got the scene where she's talking to old lovers while she's drunk playing the Ouija board by herself.
Yeah, I just feel like she was so good. Like, if you pluck Elaine Stritch out for most of her role, I thought that was really fun. But then it feels out of place with everything else that's happening. Then Sam Waterston, who's very handsome, he just looks like a really nice guy. And again, it just feels like a very obvious choice, like cast this guy who is disarming. Like I wish it were a little more sophisticated. Like, he is a little more sultry and debonair, and like, because I didn't like that it was so obvious what he was doing with his words. Mm-hmm. Like, sure. When he's talking, it's like, oh, he's clearly just using everyone. Mm-hmm. But then he doesn't look like that, and to me that seems real basic.
Sure, but I don't think Christopher Walken would have fit that role either.
I don't know. Well, when I think about him, I think like, oh, he has like this quirky personality. And then I feel like if he were written correctly,
yeah,
you could see him being alluring, like, oh, he's really charming. Because Sam Waterston's not charming in this movie. He just looks like someone you'd feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is,
he's disarming.
So it makes sense. I just didn't think it was like, it left me feeling like, this was meant to be a comedy, but they didn't write jokes.
That's what that was Alan's approach to Interiors. He said, it's like one of my comedies, but I just took all the jokes out.
Yeah. And so it's like, well, maybe we need that. I think this story, like the way you're telling it, needs some humor because it's not dramatic enough. Sure. Like, even when Mia realizes Diane is like, you know, pushing up on her crush, It just felt so like, well, you're a little irritated, but then you two sit down and,
well, there's that
it's scene, all milquetoast to me.
Oh, there's that scene where I feel bad for these women by the end. Like, and
oh, I do too.
Like when Mia Farrow's crying at the window and she's talking about how lonely she is, there's this achiness to the film that I think throughout that I feel kind of a kinship with, maybe, but I liked it.
I think the most effective part is, so Mia is upset that Elaine is considering giving Sam the story to write, because the implication is like, or, you know, what Mia is afraid of, I'm sure, is that
it's like, not going to be the true story.
This was a traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. And like, if you write this book, it's going to get like brought up again, and then it's going to be in the news, and then I'm going to be the center of attention again. And like, how is that going to affect me? Like, mom, you seem to have never cared about how your actions affect me. I thought that was the strongest plot point in the movie.
They do. And they keep getting into little tiffs about, like, and Elaine Stritch keeps saying, stop blaming me for you not having lived your life.
It's like, yeah.
But you are to blame.
Right. So I almost think that this would have been better, like, if most of the story involves these two.
Well, then,
and their relationship, and then all these supporting characters are sort of helping weave us in and out of, like, slowly stack the truth, so that the culmination of it all is we find out that Mia didn't shoot that man, Elaine did.
It's still a pretty good that reveal is still a pretty good moment.
It's effective because it's a shocker, but it's also like, that's a pretty big thing.
I need to make you watch Night Mother with Sissy Spacek and M. Bancroft. And it's just the two of them. And it's Sissy Spacek, who has some kind of neurological disorder. I don't know if she's epileptic. And she basically tells her mother, I'm killing myself tonight. So the whole play and of course the film is about the mother wanting to stop the daughter from trying to from killing herself that night.
Elaine tells Mia, "You dress like a Polish refugee. I thought that was funny. She also tells Mia, because Elaine thinks Mia's desperate, like,
yes,
and then she tells her, "I always felt like there was a fatal air of hunger in your last affair." My God, bitch.
And then Mia's like, "You only saw us together once." She's like, "Well, I could tell." And that is the man, a married man, because she basically tells her daughter, "You drove him back to his wife." That's who she tried to overdose over when he left.
Oh God. Oh, so then Sam comes over to like take Mia on a date. Basically, like, he brings her flowers.
You're gonna go to a Kurosawa film.
And it was really awkward how all of a sudden he leaves Mia to go talk to Diane.
Yeah.
And then that's when their little sort of thing starts to bud. But that scene was kind of clunky to me. Like, I didn't quite. Mm-hmm. Like,
sure, okay. it's not perfect, but I think Woody was doing some interesting things, because right after this he did a great film that I think is underrated with Jenna Rollins and Mia Farrow. Jenna Rollins is playing this terrible, overbearing woman, like, where her children hate her, everybody hates her, but she starts to become obsessed because she's going, whatever, I forget the building she's going into, but she can overhear the therapy sessions of the woman played by Mia Farrow, who's this fragile pregnant thing, and starts to feel a kinship with this woman.
Oh,
it's very interesting.
Then they're having they're trying to liven up the mood. So they're playing music and Elaine just being loud and crazy. She's like, "Don't you have any Coon Sanders Nighthawk Orchestra?" And I'm like, "What? Coon Sanders?" So I looked it up, and that music sounds so old timey, like vaudevillian type shit. Like, you want to get the party started with this? Girl, sit your old ass down.
Oh, and then that scene's awkward because she's trying to get Sam to dance with you. She's like, you should ask Lane to dance. And then Lane comes in and she's like, Sam wants to dance with you.
But then I can't really criticize her music choices, because the music they do end up playing throughout most of the film is very light jazz, mm-hmm. which is the music I play when I'm trying to work. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very relaxing.
That's kind of what he likes, a jazzy sound.
Yeah, and I do too.
But yeah,
the neighbor.
Oh, Denholm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's really trying to push up on Mia. But she's telling him she's in love with Sam. And he's like.
And he's like jealous of Sam.
But he's like kind of gross.
Well, he's old, you know, and he knows that. And he's like trying to convince her in his way. Like, does our age difference bother you? I'm going to miss you so much.
No, man, you smell like mothballs. That's Aww. Why. Although Mia looks like, oh, God. Mia looks like she doesn't get enough minerals.
Probably not.
And her, yeah, she looks like she has a very restricted diet.
Sure, I believe that's probably true.
With those translucent ass teeth. Diane's character, she's like on sabbatical from her husband, mm-hmm. who's a radiologist. And at a point, she tells Sam Waterston that she won't even let her husband take x-rays of her because she feels like he will be able to see her true feelings about him.
That is a dumb line.
That's the dumbest line I've heard in a long time.
That's why I said the dialogue for the most part is pretty good. But like that's kind of like, oh, that could have been, that idea could have been finessed in a different way. But, you know, then you get a gem like what the line that I think sums up all these people in this movie is, someone says, "You do funny things when you feel empty inside."
Oh, yeah.
Like I think there's some beautiful passages of the dialogue. But yeah, every now and then there's kind of like,
When Elaine's talking to Sam about the book and she's like, "Oh, I know so many Sammy Davis stories. He's the best." What?
Oh, and when the people are, because there's pictures of a young Elaine Stritch framed throughout the house, or that's very Blue Jasmine in that moment when Elaine and Mia are arguing about who owns the house.
Yeah.
Well, who? I don't know. Do I own it? No, I gave it to you. Like, what?
And then Mia tells Elaine, "It's expensive to be sick. I need this house money." And then she's telling her mom, like, "I'm just wrecked and you come and go with no guilt." Like, I felt bad for her.
I do too.
I thought this movie was good.
Especially because Woody would then do something, the same thing that happens to Lane happens to Mia Farrow in real life.
It just makes me want to go see a Chekhov play.
That Parker Posey rendition I saw in April was the adaptation of The Seagull. You know what? You know.
Or I would love to see a production of September on stage, because I do think it could be. I think it's the casting.
You know what?
You have to have the right cast.
That reminds me, when I interviewed Parker Posey, she talked about an adaptation of Three Sisters that I haven't seen, that I've known about, I think with Shelley Winters. And she's like, oh, you need to see it on YouTube. So actually, maybe that would be, we should watch Three Sisters.
YouTube. What would you give this movie?
3.5.
I would give it 3 out of 5. Anything else you want to say about September?
Wake me up when it ends.
Okay, well.
It's a Green Day reference.
No. I didn't. Oh, yes, I do know that song. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that a September 11th related
song? Oh, I don't know.
Song?
I don't know. What do we have coming up?
The only major press screening I think I'm trying to take you to this week is for The Creator.
What's that about?
It's the new Gareth Evans film.
Oh.
But yeah, I don't know. We have family related stuff and a wedding to go to this coming week. So there's
all that. Yeah, we have, there's quite a, yeah.
And then I forgot this is coming out this week, but we watched this like months ago. It Lives Inside, that drops this week.
Oh yeah.
Actually it's not a very good week for releases, because the new Expendables movie is coming. That's kind of the big one.
Oh,
and I'm assuming
we're not watching that, are we?
I didn't have any interest. I'm assuming you didn't either.
Well, because Jason Statham's in it, I think.
Yeah, like all the old, the gang's all here. I just don't.
I wouldn't. I mean,
I've watched at least two of those, and to me, they're caca. I don't know. There's a new Spy Kids movie coming out. Blech.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I can catch up on things I need to do.
But yeah, so The Creator is the big deal screening we're going to this week. Oh, and shout out to, I'm going to see one of these films this afternoon. The American Cinematheque, if you're in LA, they're doing an Arturo Ripstein retrospective. Fantastic director. I mean, and there's an opportunity to see some stuff that is very hard to get a hold of, much less see a good print of it on the screen. Today, I'm going to see The Realm of Fortune, which I'm very excited about. I've never seen. And I hope I can fit at least one other one in. And more excitingly, next Sunday, they're having, next weekend, they're doing some restored prints of Kira Miratova, which I'm very excited for. Very hard to see a fantastic Russian filmmaker who's now dead. Very experimental, very strange. But yeah, anyway.
All done?
Sure.
Ta-ta for now. Ha!